Gunnish Cheesh for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. So I want you to think for a minute. What was your favorite board game growing up? Well, mine was Monopoly, and my friends and I also loved the game Clue. We could play that for hours. So I am probably dating myself with my answers because today's board games have names like Transforming Mars, Bastion, Furnace, Wild Space. But as Shakespeare said, what's in a name? Well, our guest today has proven again and again that the love of board games is a timeless thing. And joining me now is Joshua Warren. He's president of Platypus Gaming, the company that organizes Platypus Con, an annual convention in Juneau, which gets underway this coming weekend. So welcome, Joshua. And maybe we should start off by talking about why you started this convention.
Hi, thanks for having me. The reason we started the convention, I'd gone to some large conventions down south, and I know it can be cost prohibitive and also a little bit too large for those conventions. So we wanted to create sort of a local experience that people could do, especially in the winter when sometimes there's not a lot to do.
So you were on hiatus for 1 year because of COVID. And so I imagine that you've probably had a lot of people asking you, when are you coming back? And I guess this is going to be in person, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, we had a lot of people pretty sad that we had to cancel last year, but it was pretty inevitable. There wasn't the vaccine yet at that point. And the reason that we're able to do it this year is we're following the CBJ guidelines. So everyone is going to have to bring proof of vaccination. And we're also going to have to wear a mask in the convention. But we're trying really hard to make it a safe event for everyone. Some of the tables that generally have strangers have to be widened up so you can sit a little bit further apart but still play a game. So we're trying to make it so it's a fun, safe experience.
Boy, that would be kind of hard to move online board games, even though I guess people play digital games online all the time. But that would just kind of spoil the fun out of it, don't you think, if this somehow had to be moved online?
It definitely would take quite a bit of the joy out of it. There are some good platforms that we did advertise during the pandemic as a slight alternative, but it's going to be really great to play with people again and see them again.
Do you think people are hungry for that aspect of it? Even though we have to have masks and some distancing, there's still that in-person quality to things.
Definitely. That's part of the reason both the creation plan was actually going back to that and why I like board games is it is an inherently social experience. I'm not great at being social, but if I have a game to talk about while being social, I'm infinitely better at it.
Well, I guess that's the beauty of board games is you can be social across different generations with people you have nothing apparently in common with. But you do have the board game in common. I'm curious, so what was your favorite board game?
I will say, as a kid, I also like Monopoly and Clue. But in that same generation of games, there was Acquire, which is really great. It's an older game, I think, from the 70s. But I've moved on from most of those games. But I won't chagrin people from playing them.
I like Monopoly because it could go on and on and on, and you could be down and out. And if you just hung in there, you might, you know, pass go enough times, collect a couple $100 and be back in. I always liked that there was always a chance to succeed at Monopoly. But board games are so different today. I mean, some of the names, you know, I mentioned earlier, Bastion, Furnace, and of course everybody has heard about Dungeons and Dragons. Tell us about kind of the thinking behind modern games as opposed to some of the older ones that we used to play.
I think a lot of modern board games are really just taking, I'm always surprised that they're able to do new things with the same components. We probably have hundreds of card games, and you wouldn't think there could be hundreds or thousands of different interesting card games, but I think each one is unique in its own way and brings a lot of fun. So I don't like, there are quite a few games nowadays that require an app, which is definitely a modern thing. But I think a lot of the games today could have existed when I was younger. They just didn't happen yet. So I think it's really great to see lots of new designers come out and just twist things a little bit to make new games.
Well, I have had friends play Scrabble and cheat by going online to look for words. So I wonder if there's a lot of hybrid game playing going on today. But how many games do you personally have?
The library is for PlatypusCon is probably 95% mine, and we have around 2,000 games.
My goodness. So because you collect so many games, I'm presuming that you've tested them all?
That would be a false presumption. I'm going to try to do better in the future. I'm trying to scale back a little bit. I would say there's probably 300 to 400 of those that I haven't played. But almost all of them I've read the rule book. So I bet almost all of them could get going pretty quickly. But I have not yet played them all.
1,600 games, though, that you've tried at least. So what, in your mind, makes a good game?
Sort of actually calling back to what you said, I think a good game is one where you don't know who's going to win until near the end. Because it's never a ton of fun to be in like an hour-long game and 15 minutes in, you know you're not going to win. And also just what makes a good game is a game that you love. So one of the first questions we ask when people come and don't know what game to play is, what games have you played and enjoyed? For those Scrabble people, there's a ton of new word games that they might really enjoy if they enjoy Scrabble.
So explain to me, and for those who are uninitiated, how PlatypusCon works. I mean, you pay a fee to get in. How do you handle all of that?
So when you show up, or you can order them online still, a weekend badge for an adult is $35, and there are single days, which are cheaper. But essentially, once you show up, you're given a badge. You're given a commemorative die, which you've had every year. But with that badge, you can just walk into the library. They'll scan the barcode on your badge and scan the barcode of the game, and you just take it into the large ballrooms and play a game. We also have people teaching some games, so if you don't want to try to learn one yourself, we're happy to teach you.
So
but we try to keep everything free inside.
So this has been advertised as a family event as well, or that it can be family friendly. How does that work, and what age range are you thinking about with kids?
We've had very young kids almost every year. Again, we do require vaccination, so the very bottom cusp we're probably not going to be able to see this year. But we've seen people well into their retirement, and we've also seen whole families playing together. There are tons of new games that are definitely designed for single-digit kids. So
how does that work? Does the family, do the parents have to supervise the kids, or do you find that the chaos is kind of naturally orderly when it comes to game playing?
We do ask that if they're under 12, they have someone to make sure they behave. But if they're behaving and the parents want to go home, sometimes we'll make some small exceptions. But in general, once kids are playing another game, they're not going to be too wily. Sometimes we need to tell them to run a little bit less. But we haven't had too many behavioral problems.
Well, kids have so much available to them that we didn't have, because many of them, you know, have played games on their parents' iPhones while they're waiting. You know, if their dad has a Peloton and he's having a virtual jogging experience or whatever. I mean, kids live in this realm. So I have to wonder, do board games still have that kind of attraction for this generation? And if they do, what is it?
I think a lot of the games I've seen kids playing are the games that you get to lie to each other for the sake of the game, to be deceptive and stuff like that. They enjoy the aha moment of figuring out who did something or who was the bad guy. But I still think that I think they also enjoy the social aspect that a video game on an iPad can provide them.
So I guess they get to sample the best of both worlds, but what do you think they get out of board games that maybe they can't get out of a digital connection?
That's a tough one. I played video games as a kid and board games as a kid, and I just think they're two different spheres. And the things you get from them are, I think it also keeps your brain a little bit more active than a video game, although video games can be pretty complicated too nowadays. But I think maybe, like, I like math, and I'm wondering if some of my math comes from enjoying things like Monopoly when I was a kid. So,
well, Monopoly had no effect on my math skills, but...
But maybe it doesn't work for everyone.
But, you know, you do have to add. You know, you have to keep track of the score, count the money. I think because of Monopoly, I was good at counting change. things like that. So there are these skills. So in some of today's games, what kind of skills do you see kids building for today's world?
If there's a theme, there's probably a game for it. So if you want to learn, there's actually a game company that entirely focuses all of their game designs on education. They just came out with a game called Genotype, which will be a play-to-win game and also a demo game at Platypus this year. And it's entirely based, the game is entirely based around Mendelbrot genetics. And that company also has, not only do they have a rule book, but they have a book about the science that the game is from in each of their games. I think that's really interesting.
So there are many platforms that games reach out to kids with. So in other words, like if you had a passion for microbiology or if you had a passion for geology, there might be a game about crystals or favorite historical events, things like that.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to not find no game for something you're interested in. And if you can actually find it, maybe you should tell a game design company and they'll be like, finally, something new. So, because we have a lot of dinosaur games and a lot of Viking games. So I think they're trying to find new things. Like Mars has been a new thing for a while, as you mentioned, with terraforming Mars. So
what's that game like? How do you play that?
That game is one of our heavier games, but essentially you're working using cards and actions to bring life to Mars through forests and water and cities. It can be a little take that, but it's still a lot of fun.
You know, I suppose you could learn some things about Mars if you were a kid playing that game, just because you'd pick up some statistics and just general scientific information as part of that game.
Definitely. A lot of the cards have what's called flavor text, where they talk about what things are. Like there are some cards that are for Phobos and Deimos, the moons of Mars, and other like talking about what kind of biology can live in colder temperatures and less oxygen temperatures. I think there's lots of room for education games.
So I picture these 2,000 games stacked up, and I'm wondering, though, will there be some that will just be the big favorites at this gathering? And what do you predict those will be?
When Terraforming Mars just came out, like it was a really hot game for a good long time, so that wouldn't be easy to predict. But I honestly don't know if there's been anything that was such a flash in the pan this year. I know Evolution is always really popular. And some of the ones, there's a lot of games coming out for Dune in the Dune universe. We probably have like 5 new games all based off that movie. One of them will be showing off and teaching you how to play. So maybe that won't be the hot one. Normally the hot ones, we try to make sure we have a demo table available for so people don't have to get flustered with the rule books.
So what about the older generation? Are they gravitating to any of these new games in particular?
I find the few people who are older, honestly, like enjoy the very similar games. They'll probably know of some old ones. Like there's some old games in our collection, like we have Twixt, and we have Acquire, as I mentioned, that we might only have because the older generation recommended them to us. If people like want a game to be in our library and request it, I will generally get it for our library just so people can show their favorite friends. But I think board games, one of the other things it gives is it is pretty big uniter. I don't think there's any games that are only for certain age groups.
Well, we have kind of been locked away for part of COVID. A lot of people had to self-isolate. So people spent a lot more time at home than they normally would, watching movies, playing games. So how did that affect game playing? Do you think that some of the old Scrabble games came out and card games during these COVID isolation periods?
I would hope so. I know that since I couldn't go out and play games with some of my other friends, that we played more games with just me and my wife than we probably would normally. And I do think it would have been if you had a family of 3 or 4, it would be a great activity that you could do while still keeping a bubble tight. So I do think that they probably came out quite a bit.
So what about post-COVID? Do you think that because games are essentially social in a lot of ways that we might see a renewed interest in game playing with board games?
I think when we actually get to post-COVID, I think there are going to be more people into board games than we had going into COVID. Simply for that reason of people trying to find things to do while they're safe at home. Like, I'm sure there's a lot more bakers after COVID than there were before COVID. I think there's probably more board gamers now. And we look forward to seeing them if they want to join us.
So you've got volunteers involved in this, people that help out, take tickets, do things like that. Are you still looking for volunteers?
We will always take more volunteers. On our Facebook page, there is a link to a form you can fill out to be a volunteer. And I really appreciate all the volunteers we have and had. There's definitely no way I could do it without them helping us. So, but if you do volunteer, I think we say 8 hours during the event, we can even give you a free badge if that's something that, if the price of the badge winds up being a concern for you. You can volunteer with us and come for free.
So you can purchase a ticket in advance by going to your website. And from what I understand, this thing, Friday and Saturday, goes until like 2 in the morning at Centennial Hall.
We do. We start at 6 p.m., go to 2 a.m. The next day it's 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. The next day we definitely have a reprieve. We only go from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. But it is, we try to stay open as much as we can. We're not quite 24-hour gaming. I need to get sleep sometime.
But do the kids enjoy that, being able to stay up late? At least you know where they are if they're out and about.
Yeah. We don't have too many people at 1 in the morning, but I think they appreciate being able to play till 1 in the morning. Some of them will be playing a board game that takes 4 hours, so if they started at 10, they need the time.
So what about snacks? I mean, you can't play a game without some popcorn or, you know, some sodas. Can you buy them there, or should you bring refreshments with you?
We definitely have refreshments you can buy. We have energy drinks if you're some of our 2 a.m. people who need a little pick-me-up. But outside of, like, we try to have some healthy snacks available, but people are free to bring in dinner if they want. I don't expect people to only buy our snack food for, they're going to stay 10 a.m. through 2 a.m. on Saturday.
And so you can come and go once you have the pass, so you could go out and get a dinner break or whatever.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to have a way to indicate that you have been checked to make sure you were vaccinated before the event so that you'll have that as well. So once you have the badge and that wristband, you can freely come and go during our hours.
So one last question for you is, where did you get the name for your business, Platypus? Why that?
It just happened to be my favorite animal, and we wanted something unique. We didn't want to be called like Juno Board Game Con. That just seemed a little too normal, and I'm not really one for normal, since I love platypuses. So.
Well, for a small community like Juno, and it's relatively small, although one of the larger communities in Alaska, it's pretty amazing that you have something like this available. I mean, how unusual is it for a small community to have a conference like this?
I think it's pretty rare, because down south in Lower 48, there are regional conventions that are still, even the smaller ones are bigger than us, because people can just drive to another hub and go to one. But I think we're fairly unique in that we just don't have an easy way to go to all those other cons. So that's why we did this one, is to try to provide a similar experience locally.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us, to tell us about this year's Platypus Con and that it happens to be your favorite animal. Now we know why it's called that. Thanks so much, Joshua Warren, president of Platypus Con.
Look forward to playing with everyone.
All right.